This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, March 29th, 2002. I'm Nell Abram. Israeli troops move into Ramallah and launch another major military offensive, cornering Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat in his office. The French government expresses regret about the U.S. decision to seek the death penalty for Zacharias Moussaoui. And protesters at Los Angeles International oppose immigration sweeps through the airport. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Rob Manning with headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Bulldozers and tanks knocked down walls as Israeli soldiers seized Yasser Arafat's compound in Ramallah today. Inigo Gilmore is there.
Two armored personnel carriers emptied the troops out into the car park and then proceeded to enter through the hole in the compound and went through the building into rooms on the floors above, going into rooms, shooting into rooms, and throwing stun grenades. The rumors were that Arafat had retreated to a basement bunker with his bodyguards. And what the Palestinians are saying is that Arafat's own life could be under threat still. He told Al Jazeera television today that he would be happy to go down as a martyr. And the Israelis are saying, on the other hand, that they don't intend to harm Arafat. Certainly, I think the international community would not tolerate such an action. The United States has said that they will not tolerate any harm personally done to Yasser Arafat, who they still recognize as the leader of the Palestinian people.
That was Inigo Gilmore in Ramallah. Activists from around the world, including anti-globalization celeb and sheep farmer Jose Bové, are in the Middle East to act as body shields. Arusha Kalambi is in Bethlehem.
All the Palestinians are totally trapped. And I think there are lots of people who are trying to get as much food and things as provisions as possible in case the incursions come. The streets are empty virtually, and everybody's scared. And well, but we feel we still have to come because our presence is going to help stuff. And People are not going to be killed as easily and wounded as easily if there's a huge bunch of internationals who are here. We hope anyway. So we're all here and all mobilized and motivated.
Protesters blocked a major road to Buenos Aires amid continued unrest, looting, and government crackdowns in Argentina. Sebastian Hotcher is with the Independent Media Center in Buenos Aires.
In La Matanza, the biggest district in the country, hundreds of persons are blocking a national road, demanding for food and saying that if food doesn't come, more looting will follow. The fear of more looting has the government put more policemen in the streets of Gran Buenos Aires and in the main cities in four provinces. The armed lootings are beginning while officials discuss the new economic plan forced by the International Monetary Fund. On Monday, the IMF arrives in Buenos Aires. For FSRN, Sebastian Hatcher and Tomás Thorne in Buenos Aires.
The Interior Department admitted today President Bush's plans to open the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling could threaten the environment. Joshua Chaffin reports from Washington.
The report appears to contradict President Bush's Interior Secretary, Gail Norton. Norton has said repeatedly that ANWR can be drilled without harm to the area's flora and fauna. Environmentalists say it's not worth the risk, since the amount of oil available on the site wouldn't really diminish American dependence on imports. The ANWR plan is one of the most contentious parts of the administration's energy bill, now pending in the Senate. Republicans who support drilling in the protected area propose a compromise, reducing the number of acres that would be opened. But Democratic Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle has said Republicans can't sway enough Democrat votes to make the drilling happen. While it makes no specific recommendation, the new report from the Interior Department appears to bolster the case against drilling. A spokesman for the Bush administration says ANWR can be developed while protecting the environment. Senate debate on the energy bill resumes in the coming weeks. Joshua Chaffin, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
Nearly two dozen inmates walked out of Arizona prisons today thanks to botched clemency denials left over from the state's former governor. Leslie Clark has more from Albuquerque.
Arizona state prisons are releasing inmates because of errors in paperwork by former Arizona Governor Fife Symington. So far, 22 prisoners have been set free, with eight more scheduled to be released next week. A total of 179 inmates have been affected by an Arizona Supreme Court ruling. The former governor didn't properly sign papers denying them clemency. The Arizona legislature eased sentencing standards in 1994, and a state's board later recommended commutations for prisoners whose sentences were harsher than what's called for under the 94 law. The Arizona Supreme Court ruled in February that clemency for one former inmate was improperly denied, leading State Attorney General Janet Napolitano to order the release of 31 prisoners. An aide to former Governor Simington reportedly signed the denials of clemency on Simington's behalf, but the court ruled the document doesn't identify the aide and the signature isn't legible. Simington left office in 1997 after being convicted of bank fraud, but was later pardoned by President Clinton. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leslie Clark in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
For Free Speech Radio News, this is Rob Manning.
The Israeli army is bringing some 20,000 reservists back into what could turn out to be the largest Israeli mobilization in more than a decade. The Israeli cabinet says it's out to defeat the Palestinian terror infrastructure. Israeli troops today moved heavy artillery into Palestinian Authority leader Yasser Arafat's compound in a military offensive that is expected to be wide-ranging and drawn out. After the three-story building containing Arafat's offices came under heavy tank and machine gun fire, the Palestinian leader was cornered on the middle floor. Just before tanks began shelling Arafat's offices, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon said, "Arafat is a terrorist and will be isolated."
We regard Chairman Arafat as an enemy.
Sharon says the operation will continue for weeks, if not longer. He says Israel has no plans to harm or arrest Yasser Arafat. Palestinian activist Mustafa Barghouti.
They're attacking with every kind of weapon they have. And in my opinion, they're trying to assassinate Mr. Arafat. If somebody is in a building and they're shelling it and bombarding it, how can his life be safe? And is this the way to treat what they call a partner in negotiation or a president of another country who is elected democratically? I think Sharon is out of his mind and he is behaving as a fascist occupier. And what he is doing is a continuation of his military criminal crime, that he war crime that he started in 1982 in Sabra and Shatila. And he must be stopped.
Palestinian refugees clashed with police in several cities today, protesting Israel's assault. Awad Duabes is in Ramallah. Awad, what's happening there now?
Here in Ramallah, the situation is really bad. People are at their homes because of the curfew since this morning. And also Israeli army is occupying the entire city of Ramallah. And the Israeli army is concentrating its attacks on the Palestinian president's office, Yasser Arafat, in Ramallah.
Palestinian Authority leader Arafat says that he's contacted U.S. officials to demand action to prevent an increased eruption of violence across the Middle East. What exactly does Arafat want?
Well, what Arafat wants, what Palestinians want, what the Arab world wants, and what I think the region wants from the United States of America is to say to Israel, stop your action, stop your war, and start negotiations on how to withdraw from Palestinian-occupied land. That is what we want. Now, Palestinian officials, Palestinian population are totally and 100% convinced that this attack and this plan launched by Israeli army had been agreed on by the administration of President Bush, because Zinni is here and we heard nothing till the last press conference of Mr. Powell saying that the terrorism is the problem and not talking at all about Israeli occupation of the Palestinian land. I think that Israeli government and Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, that we can never trust because we had tried already in Lebanon in 82, is driving the whole region into war, and he is playing with the blood of his own people, because if Arafat disappears today, I think that we will have at least another 10 years of violence between the two people, and we will have a very, very minor chance of a peace agreement, because Arafat now is the only person who can sign an agreement with Israel, because any other Palestinian leader cannot sign any agreement with Israel, not in 10 years at least.
Israel has dramatically attacked the offices of Yasser Arafat today. Awad, what is the connection between the Palestinian Authority and the suicide bomb blasts?
It is really bad. It is really a tragedy that a girl of 17 years old or 18 years old go to Tel Aviv or to Jerusalem to kill herself in order to kill other innocents, other civilians in Israel. But what is more tragic, I think, is the reasons that make a girl of 18 years old go to kill herself in order to kill others. Now, the Palestinian Authority is trying its best to prevent such attacks, but also at the same time, yani, even Arafat cannot move out of his office. So how can the Palestinian police, how can the Palestinian security forces move in order to take actions? I mean, the attack now is putting Arafat, is putting the Palestinian people into a situation that the Palestinian people have nothing else to lose, so they are killing themselves in order to express themselves. This is really tragic to say, but this is the situation.
What will life be like tomorrow morning for people who live in the occupied territories?
Well, yani, at least it is a little bit ridiculous to say that, but I think there will be no tomorrow morning, because Palestinian people did not sleep last night and they will not sleep tonight. So for them, we are living a nightmare since the day before yesterday. There will not be tomorrow. Everyone is watching TVs, and those who don't have electricity are listening to radios and only hoping for one thing, that Arafat will not be harmed, because if so, I think it will be the big mess in the whole region.
Sharon is calling on all Israelis to unite behind the government, saying he expects mounting international pressure over the military operation. Russia and France were critical of the Israeli offensive. Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak sent a message to President Bush calling for immediate American intervention, while the Persian Gulf nation of Qatar called for an emergency UN Security Council session. The offensive comes just one day after the suicide bombing in Netanya that many now call the Passover Massacre. That same day, Arab League members adopted the Beirut document, endorsing the Saudi peace proposal, in which Arab nations held out the prospect of normal relations with Israel, provided Israel withdraws from all the territory it occupied in the 1967 war, allows for a Palestinian state with its capital in Jerusalem, and provides for the return of refugees. Raphael Kraft is in Beirut and reports on Arab reaction.
So far, Arab reactions to the Israeli assault on Yasser Arafat's headquarters are limited to rhetoric. Countries like Egypt and Jordan that host an Israeli diplomat haven't taken any measures yet that would lead to the dismissal of any Israeli ambassadors. In their statements, most of Arab leaders linked the Arab League summit that ended yesterday with a Saudi peace proposal with today's attack on Arafat's compound by Israel. In a statement, Lebanese President Emil Lahoud, the chair of the summit, said hours after the Arab Peace Initiative was issued, Israel replied with a barbaric war and a flagrant and brutal aggression. Egyptian Foreign Minister Ahmed Maher called the offensive foolish, illegal, and a message of war and aggression to the Arabs as a response to their message of peace. While Qatar, current chair of the Organization of the Islamic Conference, called for an emergency UN Security Council session to discuss the situation. Emotions ran throughout the Arab world as television broadcast images of Israeli troops and tanks battling Palestinian security forces in Ramallah. In Jordan, riot police threw tear gas canisters at hundreds of Palestinian refugees to prevent them from marching outside the Wehdat camp in an anti-Israel protest. In Lebanon, Palestinian refugees burned tires in protest. After a telephone conversation from Beirut with an unable U.S. official, of Saudi Arabia said United States had given their assurance that Yasser Arafat would not be harmed by Israeli forces. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Raphael Kraft in Beirut.
The French government expressed regret at the U.S. decision to seek the death penalty for Zacharias Moussaoui, a French citizen of Moroccan origin and the only person charged with respect to the September 11th attacks. Attorney General John Ashcroft said the decision to pursue the death penalty stemmed from the impact the attacks had on thousands of victims. Paris says it will not provide evidence that could lead to a death sentence. French human rights groups have expressed outrage over the decision and say they will maintain pressure on France and the European Union to take stronger measures. More from Sputnik Colombie in Paris.
I share the grief of all those Americans touched by the attacks because I am also a mother and I feel their tragedy deeply. But my son was arrested on August 16th. He was in prison. I cannot see how he can be held responsible, as the papers say, for 3,000 deaths. For me, my son is innocent. The real criminals must be found. If the Americans have proof, let them show it. I only ask they don't make my son the scapegoat.
Aisha El-Wasi, the mother of Zacharias Moussaoui, insists her son is innocent and that she will continue to struggle for justice. Unfortunately for the Moussaoui family, the death sentence risked by Zacharias has been upstaged by renewed violence in the Middle East and an unprecedented shooting spree in a Paris suburb. Media coverage here in France is conspicuously low-key. The French government says it will cooperate with American authorities but won't hand over evidence which leads to a death sentence.
So we will work towards handing over the documents and finding the truth. But under no condition will we hand over documents if they are destined to support the death penalty.
Justice Minister Marie-Lise Lebranchu's words were perhaps meant to reassure, but they're of small comfort for Moussaoui's family and human rights activists who say the French position lacks muscle. Anne-Charlotte de Martin is with the anti-death penalty group Ensemble contre la peine de mort.
They should be saying, we don't want the death penalty to be imposed on that French citizen who was in jail at the time of the attacks. And there are other ways to do justice. Basically, that's all what they can do, because legally he's been arrested in the US. There's no way for us to get him back here in France.
Michel Toubiana, president of the French Human Rights League, is also disappointed with the French position, which he says is typical of the post-September 11 scenario. Paris doesn't want to be dubbed a terrorist haven, and perhaps it would like return U.S. cooperation. But whatever the reasoning, says Toubiana, it sets an unfortunate precedent.
It's a hypocritical message, clearly insufficient, and reflects the sordid arrangements between governments, where the rights of governments come before the rights of citizens. And we are here to remind them that it should be the other way around.
The Moussaoui affair may not have grabbed the headlines, says Anne-Charlotte de Martin, but French public opinion has long been against the death penalty and its continued use in the United States. People here know Moussaoui's Islamist connections, she says, but that doesn't mean he should be given the death penalty or be deprived of a fair trial.
French people are very, very concerned about the American justice system. As you know, there are a lot of people supporting Mumi Abu-Jamal and other people on death row. The campaign was very high when Odell Barnes was executed 2 years ago. So people are very aware about the unfairness of the American justice system. It's unfair on blacks, it's unfair on the poor, so it's going to be unfair of this guy who's a scapegoat.
And public opinion can be manipulated, adds human rights lawyer Michel Toubiana, and it has, especially in the wake of September 11th.
I think public opinion is ambivalent. People know full well what's happening with the Al-Qaeda prisoners does not conform to standards. But since September 11, public opinion has also been fanned by a security scare, where governments have used people's fears to push through several measures, and hence public opinion isn't very favorable. But what people think won't prevent us from acting.
Aisha El-Wasi says she's deeply grateful to all those fighting against the death penalty for her son. But it would have been a totally different story, she feels, if his origins had been different.
If he had been of French origin, the authorities would have acted differently. They have done nothing to date. They allowed a U.S. federal judge to come to France and ask questions to prove their accusations against my son. And now they say they regret that the death penalty is being sought. But it's not a question of regretting. They should defend Zacharias as they would any other French citizen. The death penalty was abolished years ago in France, and my son's civil rights are not being respected either here, in France, or in the United States.
I'm Sputnik Kilambi in Paris for Free Speech Radio News.
Yesterday morning, the State of Tennessee Board of Paroles and Pardons met at the Riverbend Maximum Security Institution in Nashville to determine the fate of Abu Ali Abdur-Rahman. Abdur-Rahman was convicted for the killing of Daniel Miller in 1986. On death row now for 16 years, Mr. Rahman has yet to have his entire story heard before a court. Clemency is the last chance, a fail-safe measure allowing for the correction of errors or omissions in the normal process of trial and appeals. Hal Humphreys attended the hearing and has this report.
Monday night, the 17th of February, 1986, James Jones, now known as Abu Ali Abdul Rahman, and an accomplice broke into the home of Patrick Daniels under the auspices of intimidation to rid their community of a supposed drug dealer. At some point in the evening, things went horribly awry, and Daniels, bound with duct tape, was murdered. The jury found Abdul Rahman guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced him to death. According to his lawyers, Rahman never had his full day in court. Facing a hostile parole board, Abdul Rahman and supporters from around the country pleaded for mercy, not absolution. Abdul Rahman, having navigated the system, simply wanted to have his story heard for the first time.
That's why I'm here. Nobody ever don't want to hear what I have to say. And it has started as a youth, not 51 years old, and not when I got locked up at 86. It started a long time ago. No one never wanted to hear me talk.
Rahman and his supporters detailed a lack of adequate defense and other issues with the judicial system. Lionel Barrett, Abdul Rahman's original trial lawyer, who failed to offer any mitigating evidence in the sentencing phase of the trial, attended yesterday's hearing, pleading for clemency.
As a person that has tried many death penalty cases, this is the only death penalty case that I have ever taken this position in, that I was totally, totally ineffective as counsel. I did not come before board saying that I messed up in a case. It's very difficult to do, but I did.
And at times, it seemed the board understood the issues presented. Addressing the judge's misleading directions to the jury, board member Hassel.
So the jury was put in a position here where they thought that they had to vote unanimous or declare a mistrial, the way it sounds to me. I'm trying to put myself in the mind of a jury here, and I would have a problem with this very much.
In its final decision, the Board of Parole said that the defense had done an excellent job at trial, a remark which drew groans and laughter from the gallery. Board member Dalton summed up the board's feelings with a prepared statement.
You didn't have any mercy on him. Didn't have any mercy on the lady. And even to the point of sticking a knife in her back. Now, that just doesn't get any worse than that as far as I'm concerned. Now, I have to vote to decline and the sentence to be carried out.
Supporters of Abdul Rahman, who began the day with a sense of hope, were stunned by the unanimous recommendation against clemency. Brad McLean, Abdul Rahman's attorney, his suit wrinkled and his tie askew, looked exhausted after the 8-hour hearing.
All I can say is that today the veil over the temple of justice has been rent in twain from the top to the bottom. And I just hope the governor can figure out what we're doing here. Thanks.
The state of Tennessee reinstated the death penalty in 1976. Tennessee executed Robert Glenn Coe on April 19, 2001, its first execution in 40 years, opening the door for a backlog of death row prisoners. David Rabin crafted Tennessee's current death penalty law. He noted that once a state begins killing, it's a hard thing to stop.
So now everybody's on the train to doom, as it were. They're ready to be executed, one after another, like most other states. Once they get the first few going, then they just parade the rest of them through there because there's nothing to stop it.
In Nashville, I'm Hal Humphreys for Free Speech Radio Network.
Protesters gathered at Los Angeles International Airport yesterday to protest ongoing Immigration and Naturalization Service sweeps at the airport. 2 weeks ago, the INS beefed up operations at the airport. Since then, they've arrested 184 suspected undocumented immigrants. It's a move that's caused alarm in Los Angeles's Latino community. While protesters call the sweeps discriminatory, the INS says it's cracking down on smugglers who send immigrants by plane from Los Angeles to the rest of the country. Justin Stinchcomb reports from LAX.
Hundreds of trade union and immigrants' rights activists marched to LAX's Terminal 1. Protesters say last week's sweeps at the terminal constitute racial profiling. Jasmine Perez of SEIU Local 1877.
They're just targeting immigrant workers. That's all that they're targeting. There's all kinds of people that take this airlines, and it's only Spanish immigrant people. And that's what these people are so mad about.
Francisco Arcaute of the INS denies that allegation.
This agency
detains undocumented aliens of all colors, shapes, and sizes every day. The reason why, in this case, persons of Latin American origin were detained because historically, those are the people who enter through this area in higher numbers.
Protesters also say that the INS is trying to distract the public from the agency's recent embarrassments, including the granting of student visas to September 11th hijackers Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehi. Arcaute says his agency launched the recent sweeps as a matter of law enforcement, not publicity.
The operations that took place last week at LAX occurred because we responded to intelligence that there had been an increase in the smuggling of undocumented aliens. This agency targets crime smuggling, does not target any specific group.
He says that the smugglers prey on the immigrant community, charging thousands of dollars to move people across the border and endangering their lives in the process. But Maria Elena Durazo, president of the Hotel Employees and Restaurant Employees Union in Los Angeles, says that's not the point.
We're not here to protect smugglers because we understand that smugglers are not good for our communities. They also do bad for our communities. But the way to catch those smugglers is not by creating fear in a much, much bigger, broader community. And in fact, again, their priority should be catch those criminals. We don't want another World Trade Center. Put your energies into that and not into catching busboys and dishwashers.
While Arcaute says the goal of the sweeps has been to arrest the smugglers themselves, thus far, none have been apprehended. Most of those arrested have been deported, but the INS says that less than a dozen have been held for questioning. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Justin Stinchcomb in Los Angeles.
Free Speech Radio News was produced at Pacifica Station KPFA in Berkeley, California, and Community Radio WMNF in Tampa, Florida. I'm Nell Abram.
I'm Sputnik Kilambi in India. I report for Free Speech Radio News because it brings you the voices of the people and not just those who claim to speak in the name of their people. Free Speech Radio News only stays on the air with your financial support. Please make a donation to Free Speech Radio News online at www.fsrn.org. That's www.fsrn.org, or call 510-287-5551. That's 510-287-5551.